Hello and welcome to the Forever Bristol City podcast. It's league action back at Ashton Gate for the first time in 17 months. 17 months to the day. Today is August the 7th, 2021. Last time it was March the 7th, 2020. And it was a 1-1 final scoreline against newly promoted Blackpool, but the manner of the Blackpool goal in the very last kick of the game, it felt more like a defeat. Joining me is Ian and quite a few people in the studio as well. So let's have your comments as our conversation develops. Ian, you were there for the Villa game, and you said on the Radio Bristol, when I heard you speaking there, you'd been down, saw them down at Plymouth. Somebody said on Radio Bristol the atmosphere wasn't good. I thought it was okay. What did you think?
I thought the atmosphere was okay. I thought Blackpool, with their 1,000 fans, upped the atmosphere, if you will, with a bit of singing and dancing. But let's be honest, although listening to Radio Bristol, I think I watched a completely different game to some people.
In what way? Way do you say that, Ian? In what way do you say
People say, well, you know, lots to look forward to, some very promising performances. Before the start of this season, as I said, when we've done pods, I said to you at the time, I can't see where the goals are going to come from.
No.
And I can't see where the goals are going to come from. I can't
and
say...
And you can't see where the goals are going to come from, exactly.
No, well, we got... we had two shots on target today and we scored with one of them. They had one shot on target and scored with it.
We did have 11 in total, as you say, that we did at the they did at the post
as
well.
But 11 in total and only having two on target, that's not good. That's bad.
Yeah.
You know, you're better off if we had six shots and five were on target. I think, well, okay, yeah, that's a bit of quality there, but desperately lacking a striker. I thought the manager lost 2 points with his substitutions.
Meaningless substitutions, weren't they?
When he took Adam Scott off, who was blowing, and I'm surprised he wasn't taken off 10 minutes earlier. He should have put Naki Wells on.
Yeah.
And gone and got another goal.
Yeah, but he would say that he was positive when he brought Sam Bell on, but it's bringing in an 18-year-old kid when you got a 20-goal-a-season, potentially striker, wasn't it? Yeah? So it was bad substitutions.
I thought our substitutions were bad, and I thought theirs were good. So,
well, the two guys who came on for them combined for the goal, didn't they?
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you... we had enough chances in the first half to win that game, but the reason... we didn't win the game is we didn't take them. And the reason we didn't take them is because we haven't got a goal scorer. And it really is as simple as that. We played, I think, take the first 10 minutes out of the first half.
They looked reasonable. Yeah, they were reasonable themselves.
I thought we looked quite dominant. I mean, the defence couldn't have done that badly because they only had one shot on target.
Yeah.
But I still... I've said it before and I'll say it again. I cannot see how Thomas Kallas and Naki Wells
can't get in a starting lineup.
Can't get in our if you're looking for goals, Naki is the only guy we got who's capable of scoring 20 goals a season. I'm not saying he will. I'm just saying he's capable of it.
Yeah.
None of the other guys are.
Yeah, let's look at the starting lineup, Ian. I mean, certain people conspicuous by their absence, never mind in the 11, but even in the match day squad. But then we're restricted to, is it seven subs and you're only allowed to use three? So back as it was. Dan Bentley in goal, no surprises there. But Dan Bentley, captain. I don't see how a goalkeeper can really be captain. You can see what's going on in front of you, but when you're talking about how to position a free kick on the edge of the box, I don't think it works. But Dan Bentley in goal. The back four was what we expected. Viner, Baker, Atkinson and De Silva. And then the midfield pivot of Red Leicester now, James and King. Scott in the starting lineup. I was really pleased about that. And O'Dowda. Was it a 4-2-1-3? Because Scott seemed to be playing in the middle, really, didn't he? Yeah, and it became a 4-2-2-2, didn't it? When Palmer came on, sort of.
No, it was a 4-4-1-1, and the one, I don't think Alex Scott really played that much as a 10. He played more or less as a second striker, and that's not his best position. He needs to be deeper than that. I prefer him as I said, I'd play a 3-5-2, but I'd have him in that middle of the three. I think he's more effective coming from those positions in those areas, and he can run through and lose his marker. If you're going to play a second striker, play Wells. But it was what I expected, apart from I thought Palmer would start instead of Scott. But it was just, I mean, O'Dowda, I hope he's okay. I don't know what the injury it was. It looked like more of a knock than a tear or a strain, but no doubt we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, O'Dowda went off. Do you think that altered the game, how City might have played? Because you know, I'm not a fan of Callum, but it was an early loss, wasn't it? And the dreaded injury, and he hurt himself trying to score, and maybe not following through in the way that might have put the ball over the line. Did you see it like that?
I did. It was a fantastic pass. I don't know if it was James or King, who I thought, I mean, that's the best I've seen Andy King play today. I thought he looked a player. He looked more like the Andy King of Leicester than what I've seen so far. So that's a tick in the box, Andy King. Thought James had a solid game. And as that pivot, if we'd have left it like that, Blackpool may not have scored. And I'm not blaming Joe Williams at all. I think he did well when he came on, but it just upset the balance in the shape of the team. And the bell for Palmer was meaningless. So not happy with that. Not happy with only having two shots on goal. And as I said previously, I don't think it's just us, but I think we're in for a long, hard season if we don't go out and get a striker and we don't do something about the formation. And like I say, I don't know what O'Dowda's injury was, but he didn't look right. He came back on the field, went down again, and then he limped off down the tunnel. So, you know, let's hope he's okay for next week, or at the very least, let's hope it's not another long-term injury, because the kids had rotten luck with injury last season.
Yeah, I mean, interesting. It shows the wealth of experience that the number of players we've got in midfield, because no place in the starting matchday squad, that's the 18, for Nash, Backinson, nor Massengo, although I think Hanoa's injured, isn't he, or not?
Pearson said the only two that weren't available for selection were the two that had had the ops. So that's Semenyo and Robbie Cundy. Now, in fairness, I'd be interested in seeing Robbie Cundy because he won more aerial challenges in League One than anybody last season. Yeah. And the Gillingham fans were absolutely raving about him. Now, I know it's only League One, but, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing him play. I'm looking forward to seeing Anton come back because I think he gives us a bit more pace and a bit more physical presence out on the right hand side. I don't think he's a striker. But those are the only two. Now, I fully expect there to be at least 9, if not 11 changes when we play Forest Green. And you've just named the midfield.
Yeah.
So if you went up there and played 3 in midfield, you can play that. And at the back, you can play a guy that was playing in the Euros. You can play another guy that was playing in the Euros in the midfield. So you may have to play a couple of youngsters up front, but we got plenty of them. So, you know, I think we'll have youngsters up front. We need to start Naki Wells probably. So put Tommy Conway or Lewis Britton next to him and see how that works out. I think it'd probably be a 4-4-2 again. You've got a ready-made replacement back four of Moore, Callas, Simpson and Pring. Then you've got your midfield that you mentioned, Massengo, Backinson, Nash. And then
as you say, you could play Naki Wells and Tommy Conway up front. Yeah. But then you haven't got any width. You haven't got any width, have you? Other than Sekou Janna. Somebody said he plays more down the middle than wide, doesn't he?
No, well, Sachs is better on wide on one side, left or right. He's a bit like Semenyo in that way. But you have got Awar Edwards, who's a left winger.
But he's not mentioned anywhere, is he? Is he injured or what? You know, because you've been asking about him for a couple of weeks. What's happening there?
Yeah, I noticed he played for the under-23s when they won 1-0 down at Weston the other night when Lewis Britton scored.
So right.
We've got plenty of players. There's no excuse to say, oh, we've got to play these three or these four, and then say, oh, they were a bit tired up at Middlesbrough. So we've got enough players. We've got 33 players in the squad. 31 are fit. So let's have a different side up there. I don't care about the result, to be honest. I'm not okay. It'd be handy if we had a cut run for the financial things. If we could get a Man City early doors or Man United, something like that, that would be nice from a financial perspective. But you know, it gives us a chance to keep all the squad fit. And it, you know, let's say Naki did play up there and he scored a hat trick, then he's kicking it the door to start up at Borough. And I think you've got to give those people a chance. Or, all right, if they don't fit into your plans, and I'm not suggesting that Callas and Wells don't fit into Nigel Pearson's plans, but if they don't fit into your immediate plans, those guys might be looking to move. They're not going to be happy to be on the bench for Bristol City for much of this season.
Well, those two and Adam Nash, really. You know, you've got three players that, you know, arguably Adam Nash should be in there, shouldn't he? Somewhere, somehow. I mean, if you look at individual players, Ian, I mean, Bentley didn't have a lot to do, really, today. He did quite a lot of punching rather than catching. I mean, I was in the ground when the goal was scored. Can't really blame him for the goal, can you? Yeah, because it was just a low ball and somebody nipped in front, didn't they? Yeah, but decent performance from Bentz.
Yeah, I thought he was okay. He came out and punched a few, didn't he? But apart from the goal, in fairness, that's why I say you can't complain too much about the defence because he didn't have a save to make.
No.
So apart from the one that thundered into the post, and I don't think any, you know, I don't think you'd have stopped that one with two keepers if it was on target.
No. That would have made it less painful if that one had gone in, really, wouldn't it? Because it wouldn't have been right at a death. And it was a time when Blackpool were sort of stepping up a gear, really, wasn't it? And you think, well, that was their chance. We're going to hang on to this, yeah?
Well, one of our big problems last season was game management. And it's a big problem again. And like I said, I don't think the manager helped. I think he made a right rick there. And if you look for the last 10, 12 minutes, all we did was give the ball back to them. And we didn't put them under pressure.
No.
And we need to learn to do that. And we need to have the energy to do it. And I, that's why I say I'm more worried than excited about the season. And I'm not being a miserable so-and-so. I'm just telling you what I think is right and what I think is wrong. We did do some decent things today. I thought King and James were good in midfield. I thought Chris Martin led the line well.
But he's not got any pace. He's not got any pace, though, Ian, has he? I know he scored the goals. He can say, well, he did his job today. But, you know, there's nothing. He's not going to put, you know, it's the deft little flicks that he might get. But, I mean, he's a good, honest pro, is Martin, right? But he's not going to get you. If he gets you 10 goals, he'll have done well. Yeah, and I think he only had one season at Fulham where he got into the teams. Yeah, but he, you know, that's a problem position. And the player that baffles me, I said to Mel three or four times, not baffles me, but frustrates me, is Andy Vyman. The number of times he goes on these 40-yard sprints when the ball's going to the keeper and he wastes all that energy, yeah? And for what? I mean, what did Vyman do today?
I thought we had an okay game today. I mean, you never question the kid's work rate, but you're right that you want more end product.
Because he's not across it. And you just said about when Semenyo comes back. He always fit. Does Semenyo replace Wyman?
Well, he can play there. And Andy Wyman, to me, his best position is second striker. So he could play next to Chris Martin. Naki Wells could play next to Chris Martin. I think you need... We are short of a Zizou replacement. Now, if we can get somebody who's 6'3" and they can run as well, then great. But if we do bring in somebody like Michael Smith from Rotherham, then it gives us that alternative. And those guys are very, very useful in both penalty areas. And that's where we were poor last season. And to be honest, I don't think we weren't great at attacking set pieces day, although Vyman missed an absolute sitter when he slashed at a ball with his left foot.
He did. That was in the first half, wasn't it? It was on the angle, in the clear. And, you know, that should have been a goal. And the goal that we did score, it was a good goal, really, wasn't it? Yeah, it was well worked.
Fantastic pass by King. A fantastic cross. Excellent headed finish. And as I said, you know, O'Dowda missed that chance and got injured. Voigtman missed that chance. Atkinson got round the back, another free kick, couldn't get the ball back across the line. And that comes down to that's when you need your Naki Wells, your fox in the box, someone who's going to stick the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, well, like a Tony Thorpe used to do and people like that, yeah, that they're yeah, just
you,
there.
That type of player, you know, Naki Wells ain't going to do anybody from 35 yards out. But if in and around the box, he's a menace. And he wouldn't have scored the goals he scored in his career if he wasn't a menace. And yeah, we've got to utilise that. And if we're not going to utilise it, let's try and get our 5 million quid back and go and get somebody that Pearson does
like.
Well,
if we get 5 million quid, we ain't going to get 5 million for Naki. We'd be lucky if we got 2.5. Red Robin said, and I don't know whether you noticed it, and I did, because the camera showed it. Red Robin said, I couldn't see from where I was sat, but Nigel Pearson was not in the dugout for the whole game. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Red Robin. He was sat up in the director's box. And one person who I thought was being very vocal from the touchline, who seemed to be sat there as quiet as a mouse of most of last season, was Keith Downing. And Ian, did you notice Pearson wasn't in the dugout or that sort of central gaze?
No, I don't take notice of anything like that, Dave. I got to be honest.
But do you think... They do.
Prefer to watch from the stand. And he's got Downing down there. And there's probably another half a dozen coaches down there because we got that many. I mean, even with...
Pat Simpson. Fleming, Curtis Mountain and... Curtis Mountain. Pat Mountain, Curtis Fleming and Downing were the ones
that
I seen making movement.
People like Alex Bowen are around it. So there's that dugout is normally packed on a Saturday because you've got the seven subs. And you've got four or five coaches down there. Mm. So perhaps Pearson thinks, well, I'll sit in the stand because you can actually see the game better. I've watched a game from the side of the pitch at Ashton Gate. It's awful because it's got a bit of a camber on it. So you don't see the game play out, if you will. So sometimes you see Allardyce do it a lot. He used to sit up in the stand with the old dongle in his ear. Or whatever you call it, earphones, talking to somebody on the bench. Then, all right, drag him off and get him on. I mean, I don't think, like I said, I thought the substitutions, even though the players that came on, I'm not having a pop at them. I'm just saying that from a tactical point of view and a team point of view, it really didn't work. And the fears I had going into this season are, to me, they seem quite well-founded.
Yeah. No, definitely. Mark, Mark's weaved his way through the Bristol traffic to come in and join us. I say we've sort of jumped around on a whole variety of topics rather than stick to the rigid format that we had last season. Ian and I have been talking about the pluses and minuses, who was in and who was out on the day. Mark, two left-footed centre-halves. Nathan Baker was at his best today, I thought. And Atkinson, you know, only the second time I've seen him play. But I thought the pair of them had decent games. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, Atkinson looked very assured, timed his challenges to perfection. Looked very good on the ball. That somebody could trust with bringing the ball out of defence and making a pass, or maybe being an auxiliary midfielder when we go attack on the front foot. Baker, I mean, he showed near the end when Blackpool were threatening. The ball was played behind De Silva and he managed to get his body between the player and the ball and warded it out. They weren't at fault. It was the fullbacks we had problems with. As usual, we've just left too much space behind, Viner and De Silva. And it was an absolute sickener, really. That's all I can say.
So are you saying, because I was going to say, Ian, I thought Viner had a good game overall and yet Mark's just pointed out, the goal did come on that side. And I haven't seen a replay of the goal, but how did you see the goal, Ian? Was that a blemish on Viner's performance, giving them that space or what? How did you see
somebody,
that?
I don't know if that was his man that he was meant to mark, but they were overloading on the left-hand side. Now, you've got to then look at, was he getting enough support off of Viman? Was Williams dropping back in there or James, whoever it was meant to be? And they played some quite nice football, but the guy got in the box and he was in 3-4 yards of space. Now, I don't know if somebody didn't track him or what. So I'd have to see that back I'd have to see that back, to be perfectly honest, because I don't know.
Yeah, so we don't know on that. And Mark, Chris Honor had said in the little preview piece we did with him this week that Jada Silva was somebody who was actually operating in a bit of a comfort zone and needed to step up a gear in his performances. Other than the fact that I do think he's too short to be a fullback, and the ball was played into space behind him a few times. How did you rate his performance today?
I think it was a steady performance. Looked a threat. The trouble is the fullbacks looked like they were only players that could provide us with the width, but they just seemed to get on top of the midfield three sometimes, which was frustrating. You know, Viner would get on top of Vyman and just not get a return pass to get behind the defender. And similarly with De Silva. I mean, Scott was making some good runs, and I was hoping Scott could beat the final man. I mean, Scott won a lot of free kicks. Got a nice wiry frame. I mean, it might be a little bit too early for him, you know, in terms of him open score goals. But he did offer a threat, and he did win a lot of free kicks. And when he went off, we completely lost that outlook completely.
Yeah, because that's what Ian said. We lost.
I mean, Ian said this to me. I mean, we effectively had three holding midfield players instead of two. And we just we should have seen the game over the line. It was just a sickener that they scored. But you always run that risk. And I mean, Casey Palmer, some nice touches, some nice block tackles, but he just kept giving the ball away high up the pitch. And when De Silva was near him, it just needed a quick pass, and they were behind us two, three, four times in the last 10 minutes. They had several chances. They blazed over the bar twice. They hit the post, and then there was that sickening leveler. So it wasn't that we didn't see it coming. That was the bad thing, you know.
Their substitutes affected the game, as Gary Johnson used to say. Ian, Alex Scott, he took the long route off the pitch to milk the applause from the crowd. I don't know whether the referee told him to do that, but
the referee did. You've got to leave the pitch by the nearest exit, if you will. And he was closer to that touchline. So that wasn't the kid's decision. It was the referee.
But he's a player, isn't he, Alex Scott? Yeah, he's... And, you know, if you're good enough, you're old enough, he fits that mantra, in my view.
Yeah, yeah. I thought he was okay.
He whipped in a couple of good balls, and then there was a free kick, which obviously they'd rehearsed on the training ground, which looks like it was going to be curled in by, I think, well, whoever was over that side, but they did the short pass to Scott. And as Mark rightly said, he won a few free kicks. Now, I thought Palmer was better today. Again, I'm not a fan of his necessarily. Do you think he gave the ball away as much as Mark was saying, Ian?
Yeah, I think he did. And it's a problem with Casey Palmer that he will give the ball away. He will lose it. And I don't... He's another one of those players to me that flatters to deceive. For a guy with his ability and an attacking midfield player, he don't get enough goals and assists. And I know I keep banging on about goals and assists, but if you're an attacking midfield player or a striker, you have to get goals and assists. Don't talk to me about work rate, running in behind, closing down. Yeah, those are all things you've got to do as well as. But you don't, if I said name three great strikers, just straight away people would go, well, Alan Shearer was a great striker. Yeah, why? Well, he got loads of goals, loads of assists, and he had the work rate as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, Teddy Sheringham, completely different type of player, but the first yard was in his head. Now, you know, I don't see what having Casey Palmer, I thought his work rate was excellent. I really did. But I don't see what having him in the side does. I'll be honest.
Well, on that basis, then, how the hell does Callum O'Dowda get in the starting lineup? Because somebody, I looked at his stats somewhere. I think he gets a goal every 20 games. Yeah, and you know, he's the only recognised winger that we've got. But his assist record is pretty bloody appalling. So we've got two players there that, if they walked out tomorrow, I don't think it would damage the squad. I mean, do you agree with that, Mark? You know, O'Dowda and Palmer, they're luxury players. They're the sort of players that, you know, like, we're old enough to remember the Duncan McKenzie. They can do it occasionally, but it's very occasionally, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, he was a bit of a Demko McKenzie was a maverick, wasn't he? He played some good games, but he had a lot of clubs because he can do it consistently. I mean, Callum O'Dowda was a much better fit on the left of a midfield three. But I mean, the reason he got injured was because he didn't hit that ball first time with his left and tried to take it back on his right.
Yeah.
So if he hit that instinctively, he would have still been on the pitch. But Palmer doesn't look right in that position. You know, left of a three, he has to be played down the centre. But yeah. So I mean, it was, you know, square pegs in round holes again. We didn't have the whip today. That's what we were lacking. Scott looked the best of those three players. Vyman had a chance to score early on, and he stuck the ball in Ashton Road. Andy King missed a chance. I thought Chris Martin worked exceptionally hard. You know, playing in a false number nine role, where you know he flicked the ball on and he held the ball up well, but none of those three had the assuredness to take a pass on and to score a goal. That's what they really need to do.
Yeah.
So, like Ian's probably said this. Ian's probably banging his head against brick wall. Where was Naki Wells when we needed to see the game out? We should have been put Naki Wells on, and we'd probably be talking about 3 points. Stick the ball in the corner, you know.
But how many did we use, Ian? Did we use all three substitutions or? Just two.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Because O'Dowda, you could have bought. O'Dowda went off early. Because you could have taken Chris Martin off and put Naki Wells, because Martin was he wasn't puffing. What's maybe this, like Scott.
Yeah, but I don't see this fixation with getting Naki Wells up front on his own. Look, if we're going to play football like Barcelona and the ball's never going to go above waist height, yeah, great. We'll have a 5'6" bloke at centre forward. Okay. We don't. If you watch, get a CD of that game, if you can bear to watch it, and look at the number of times we go high front to back, either Bentley, Parkinson, sometimes Baker, how many times the ball goes forward in the air. It's countless. It is absolutely countless. So it's no good having a bloke up front and he's being marked by a bloke who's at least 9 inches taller than you.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a staff thing. Now, if we want to play like Barcelona, Nigel Messi's 5 foot up. Nigel Messi, Lionel Messi Lionel's 5'4".
Yeah,
right. But because of the way they play, it doesn't matter. They don't need a big bloke. We do because we're Bristol City and we're not very good at the moment.
Yeah.
So, well, we played some nice balls into feet, but it was getting that next pass away because Blackpool played the high line. And we just needed to get that pass in behind him, but we just couldn't do it. Apart from Matt James, lovely chip ball, wasn't it? To O'Dowda, that was the only one.
Well, we've got, yeah. But the thing is, we had two shots on target in 90 minutes. That's the problem. Yeah. So we scored with one of them. Well, let's say shots, headers, call it what you will, efforts on target. We scored with one of them, but in all, we had 11 efforts. Only two of which were on target. Now, that really, that's not good enough. And what that says is mediocre, lower mid-table. That's what it says to me.
Well, somebody's put on here, we're a club with a top six aspirations and a bottom six side. Don't know whether we are a bottom six, but today was, on paper, for me, the best chance we got of getting 3 points in the opening games. I just want to make one quick comment on there. I haven't ignored it. Red Robin, somebody, can we get rid of the user with a racist name on there, please? That came shortly after we started broadcasting. I will be reporting that to Podbean. If they try and get into connect with us, I can block them, but I'll see what I do. Apologies for that that's there, anybody else that noticed it. But, who else have we got to talk about? Mark, I said to Ian about Andreas Vyman. he runs around a lot, but, you know, he went in the first half, he did about three runs where he expanded so much energy, running, trying to close the ball down, never getting anywhere near it. He's 32 now. Yeah, you can't fault him for effort, but should we expect more?
Yeah, I mean,
Dave, I don't think Vyman's 32, is he?
Sorry, you're right, Ian. He's 30. Probably 30. Okay, but Mark, what do you think of Vyman's contribution?
A little bit like headless chicken sometimes, running around a lot. I mean, he was like our front three today. You know, some nice touches on the edge of the area, but when they tried to get into the penalty area, didn't really do anything. You know, some nice touches to feet, but then they seemed to be, you know, on top of one another and just couldn't get that next pass away, which was really annoying because Blackpool were really square in defence, you know, inviting us to beat that offside line. They were looking to play offside most of the time, and 9 times out of 10 we were getting caught out. But he looked a bit rusty. I mean, Vyman will run himself into the ground. I mean, literally. He'll run for 90 minutes. He's 29. He was 29 on the 5th of August, apparently, according to his Wikipedia page that I just put up.
He's not quite
30. You're pushing him towards an early grave there, David, aren't you? Really?
Well.
But yeah, I mean, it was. I'm thinking we learn our last game on the 13th of March. That 3-0 away win against Birmingham City, with the classic. You know, counter-attack inside, play the ball through the middle with Zizou, you know, holding the ball up and Tolmer looking terrific and threatening to, you know, to end the season on a high. And then it just all went wrong. And today, just the bad habits surfaced. I thought Matty James and Andy King looked very assured as holding midfield players. The centre-backs looked very good. But you know, when you're getting into the last knock-ins of the game, you've got to win the game.
Well, the offensive side of the game. That's what lost the game because
we didn't score that second goal, and we got sloppy. But we were sloppy at the wrong end of the pitch. That was why, because the ball just kept going, you know, front to back quickly, mostly down the right on the right hand channel. You could see it, but then the goal was on the left-hand channel, and Vyman, he just tried to fly kick a ball. You know, if he'd have cleared it into the Lansdowne, we would have won the game. But he just went straight back to their player, and then two passes later, and it's in the back of the net. But they threatened
to do it.
That's
very good build-up. That's very good that you've remembered all those moves there. So, I mean, Ian, one of the things that I may be repeating myself, so I apologise for that. But Chris Honour said this week, you could throw a blanket over the whole squad and pull out like a half decent, two half decent 11s, right? But there's not a first 11 that you think, Christ, he's out today. You know, that's going to severely damage the side, is there? Yeah, because we've had this big clear out, but what was it? You said we got 33 players that are oven ready for the first team. Okay, there are some youngsters there, but they've all been blooded, right? 33 players, there's not 7 or 8 that are on that team sheet and we think, oh my God, if they're injured and they can't play. And is that a problem? I think it is.
Well, what you've got there is what most teams have got, in all honesty, and post-COVID is going to exacerbate that. You've got quantity but not quality. I think some of the youngsters will be good players. I don't think they are now.
No.
So you've got, of the squad, we've got 33 in the squad now. With I think you could discount James Morton because he was going to go to MK Dons, and he's obviously one that the club are prepared to release, the same as they let George Nurse go. Then you've got two lads injured. So that takes you down to 31, and three of those are keepers. So you've got enough to pick two teams. Now, are the teams of equal strength? Well, not the team I'd pick. But I think when you're looking at the team that you've got, like I said earlier on, I cannot see how Naki Wells and Thomas Kalas don't get in the starting 11. Whether that means switching to three at the back, or whether it means playing 4-5-1, or however you do it. But I think Martin needs a partner. I think Wells plays better with a partner. When we started with those two up front last season, we won the first four games, and which in reality stopped us from getting relegated.
Yeah.
Now, all I'm hoping this season is that there are three worse teams than us. It's the same as there was last season, because that's all that kept us up.
Was that start? So, and in fairness, in that opening four games, other than probably Stoke, away, yeah, which he did play well. But those four games, they could have gone like so many games in the first half of the season, because we were in the top eight, probably top six, certainly top eight up to the end of November. Yeah. But we weren't winning convincingly. We weren't thinking, well, that was a good game, or we're onto something here. It's a bloody mess, isn't it? And we're not being, people say that we're the miserable old gits on it. We're not miserable. We're realists. I thought there were some good things today. And if we'd have won it 1-0, yeah, we'd have looked at the positives, yeah, but we're just calling out the negatives that most of the people will see it, and we're just saying it. We're not being miserable. And I said to Mel on the way out, I said, Bristol City never fail to bloody disappoint, do we? I mean, if we'd have got the last-minute equaliser and it had been 1-1 and we'd got the last-minute equaliser, you think that's great. But there we were, missed chances in the first half, and then, you know, and then they score it. Okay, look, I'm conscious, guys, that, you know, Ian, you're doing this from a motorway service station, but there's a few things you want to talk about. Mark, Pearson was in the stand for the whole game. Ian didn't think that made any difference, but, you know, maybe the last 10 minutes, your manager has got to go down, maybe did have radio control with Keith Downing, who I said was more vocal than I've ever seen him from the touchline. But what do you think of Pearson being in the stand? And for that matter, because we talked about it before you came on, Bentley being captain. Strange and not ideal, just my view.
Well, I've had goalkeepers who are captains before. You know, you normally think you give it to a midfielder or a forward because they can see the game better. But yeah, I don't understand Pearson being in the stand. I mean, you've seen it in rugby union because, of course, the ball's probably up in the air a lot of the time, but then probably it is with us as well. But I don't really see that. I think you feel, don't players, you know, might feel better or might feel more threatened if the manager's there watching them, shouting instructions or guided. And Nigel Pearson's a really big personality. You think his best place is on the touchline. I just don't understand that at all. I really don't. I thought he was banned. That was why he wasn't there. I didn't understand it.
Yeah, or maybe. I don't understand it at all. Yeah, no, it's a very strange one. So, Ian, I mean, it's a difficult. We're mid-table at the moment, although there's four sides that haven't played, and that includes our next opponents in the league, Middlesbrough. But we could go, you know, one would hope that we get a result at Forest Green with our B team. Yeah, as you say, it'd probably be a totally different looking team. But then Middlesbrough away, Reading away. Let's think of the unthinkable, that we get knocked out by FGR and we lose the next two away games. The pressure's on before we even got to the first international break then, isn't it? Yes? Am I being overly concerned?
It would be the most Bristol City thing to do, to lose to Forest Green and then get 4 points off Borough and Reading. So, you know, we're not expected to do well at Middlesbrough. We weren't last season. We went up there, and I think, was it 3-1 we beat them?
Well, we won the year before
and
as well.
And the previous season, 3-1 as well, yeah.
And we beat them the previous season. So, you know, we could do that. Reading last season, we're lucky that we didn't lose that 4-5, the game at Reading. But, you know, you could go up there this season and let's see Pearson's tactical nous and see if we can come out of games like that with a point or three. So you don't know. You can't. It depends what team we've got out, what he decides to do, how well we play. And, you know, like I said, it'd be the most Bristol City thing in the world to lose to Forest Green and then win the next two league games. And then everybody starts getting all excited. Yeah. We've probably been around too long to get that excited. and then we come down to the next home game and there'll be a 0-0 draw or a 1-1 draw or something
against
like that.
Swansea. So, now, Swansea, interestingly, they lost at Blackburn today, but a certain Mr. Patterson scored. And I looked, I checked their lineup, and Patterson was playing. Smith was... but no Liam Walsh, not even on the bench. Don't say he's injured again, but...
I think he got injured the other day, yeah. He got injured in the friendly.
Liam Walsh is injured.
So, is that right?
Yeah.
Tripped over his waist packet and hurt himself.
And Corey Smith was injured for the biggest part of two seasons with us, and he's been a bit of an ever-present over at Swansea. That's the way it goes sometimes. I wouldn't knock Corey Smith, and Corey wanted to stay. It was us, we released him because we were obviously worried about that. Pato we released because Pato's one of those players.
He's a one in six, isn't he, Ian? Pato.
Yeah, he is. And he was on decent money as well because we signed him from Forest. So, you know, look, I appreciate the situation that the club's in. There's no good crying over speech. If I was Liam Walsh, I couldn't have got out of Bristol City fast enough. And I said that last season when Ashton was on 20 men, embarrassing himself. I've looked in Liam's eyes and he's looked at me and he loves Bristol. And it, well, all right, Mark, why don't he sign the contract? We love Pham and Pham loves us and we love him. And yeah, get him to sign the contract, Mark.
Ian, you've been practicing this one all summer. I think you should be on the Ipswich Town podcast with that.
Mark, can you get him to sign the contract then? Seeing as he loves it so much and he wants to stay here and his missus loves it and all the rest of it, can you just get him? What's all that noise?
That was me, mate.
Well, stop it. Can you get him to sign the contract? He loves us. Yeah, you said that, Mark. Can he sign the contract, please? Then we know where we are. We've seen this with Nicky Maynard that Lansdowne made a complete mons of, and that involved Leicester City. They wanted him for £6.5 million. Lansdowne said, no, he's signing a new contract. I want him to stay here. What do? We sell him at Christmas for £1.6 million to West Ham, right?
Yeah.
And he's done the same thing with Zizou, Walsh. They should have been given the ultimatum, if you want to call it that, the offer, 14 months before their contract runs out. Right, you've got a month to discuss it, sign it. Right, you haven't signed the contract. Right, that's it, my old son. Are you going on the transfer list? Get your agent in here. Right, get this lad a move, please. Now, that is how we should work. You wouldn't get that. How many other clubs would that happen to?
Well, Gary Johnson,
famous. Do you remember Gary Johnson? He chucked Bradley Orr out of his squad, didn't he? Back in about 2008, 2009, when he didn't sign a new contract, he said, "I'm sorry, you're not part of my plans there." And Orr signed it.
Well, he treated Basso badly as well because Basso felt that he could play at a higher level, and that was when Basso's time was over. But look, as Deo's odd, he said, "Ashton has gone, move on." Yeah, you're probably right there from that point.
The footnote of that is that when Zizou said goodbye to the City fans, somebody tweeted, "Oh, so you had the biggest offer in the club's history." Mark Ashton said, "You had the biggest offer in the club's history, fam." He said, "That's what he said."
Yeah. Well, talking about other goal scorers, I noticed ex-players Mo Issa scored for MK Dons today. Now, Andrew, I think I know this is my friend now. He said, "Gentlemen, steady on. We were one game in. Johnson Senior used to say, give it 10 games, and we were 1 minute from a very happy crowd going home. Apart from you guys, no, we're happy." Makes a lot of sense.
There were some great things going on there. I thought Atkinson was good. Atkinson and Baker, great centre back pairing. Some good things from James and King.
Yeah, we've said
and
that.
I thought Scott looked good.
No, we've said that.
We've said all of that. Sloppy at the key moments. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. typical day for Bristol football, as somebody said on Radio Bristol, because the Gas, they lost to a 96th-minute penalty as well. And I say we must move on, but Ipswich, until a last-minute equaliser, were in grave danger of losing at home to the mighty Morecambe. And interestingly, the little person he won up at the Stadium of Shite, I mean the Stadium of Light. Ian, final words from you on... there were positives, and we've not been totally negative, have we?
No, I mean, what I've said, and I'll assess it, is we created enough chances in the last 30 minutes of the second half to win the game 3-0.
Yes.
Now, so that's the positive. The negative is we only took one of the four chances we created. And that ultimately, now, the other... negative is that we only had two shots on target in 90 minutes. Now, what that tells you is we're not going to be full of goals, I don't think. Now, I looked at us in pre-season. We played two decent teams. We didn't look like scoring against either of them. That was Celtic
and Villa.
So, yeah. And I know Villa particularly are playing at a far better level, but they didn't have that many of their stars out. No. So you need to look at a game and say, right, today, I thought, shape, okay. Lost something when O'Dowda went off. Mark, you're at home. Has any comment come out about what O'Dowda's injury is, and how long he's likely to be out, or is
no, I can take a, I can take a quick look.
Yeah, take a quick look while I'm summing up. But so we will reflect the positives. We will also pick up the negatives. And only having two shots on target in 90 minutes, if you keep doing that, you'll get relegated.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
No.
So we need to be – so what I'm saying is I'm not being negative. I'm being realistic.
You're just calling it out. Ian, you're calling it out for what it is. Yeah?
Yeah.
And we'd have been savoury.
Exactly.
We've picked up the good points. We've called out the stuff that is bad. And it's good. People like Gary Hours on Radio Bristol, he pretty much calls as it is. If you listen to Chris Honour, he calls as it is. Now, we're not going to get invited to the training ground and get to meet the players and everything like that, because once we are, we couldn't look those people in the eye and be all nicey-picey to them, because we'd be being disingenuous. So we're always going to call it out as it is and praise it when it's good. And we're fans. We want, as you said, Ian, 4 points in the next two away games. And then 1 point from this. Happy bloody days. Beat Swansea, yeah, as well. Great start to the season. But it's typical Bristol City dominating a game for most of it and then conceding. You know, if it had been a consolation goal for Blackpool, you'd shrugged your shoulders and we'd have said it was good and one or two players could have been better. So, you know, we're...
Well, do you honestly think we look like scoring in the second half? How many saves did their keeper make?
Well,
we threatened around the edge of the area, but we couldn't get we couldn't get crosses into the box. Yeah, the only shots we had were from the edge of the box. I remember one from James that whistled past when he turned the ball over, and that's about it, really.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, but like you say, that's a shot off target, and you can have 4,000 of those in a game.
Mm. Yeah, you want to work the keeper. You want to work the keeper. And I'll tell you one person who might have got a goal today had he played, with the keeper being like he was, and that was Antoine Semenyo, because he only scored two last season, but both of those were with charge downs. And that keeper, I don't know what he was doing. He was running around like that on a can on to
roof. He's out injured, isn't he, sadly, at the moment, Antoine?
Well, we know that, but, you know...
Well, he's not injured. He's in rehab.
He's on grass.
He had a knee operation.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be back in September, but the window will be closed by then, and so will Robbie Cundy, who we may need, if as rumoured, and that's all it is. Thomas Callas is sold to give us some money to go out and get a striker amongst other things.
And the chances of that happening, Ian, on 1 to 10, 10 being definite and 1 being not very likely at all, where would you rate that? Because there's still 3 weeks to go in the transfer window, isn't it? Would it be England? Would it be a European club? So score 10 or 2?
No, I would say the chances of it happening are probably a 5 or a 6. There's a lot of things in it, particularly if any kind of swap deal involved, because the other player is going to want, as has to want to come, and if he's at a Premier League club, then he's going to be earning a lot of money. Now, if we say, well, we're not prepared to pay that amount of money, then the player is very likely to say, well, stuff you then, I'm off.
But hang on a bit. Which is, we had this conversation earlier today, but if you're coming to me, if you're Nigel Pearson, you're coming, and I'm Steve Lansdowne, you're saying, right, you're saying, Steve, right, got 15 million, well, 12 million quid for Callas. Okay, and that's a great deal. When he's written off in the books, so this is all coming in, right? I can get this kiddie to come in as part of the deal. Yeah, so we're going to get 8 million cash. I'm getting this kiddie going to come in, but he's going to cost us a lot in wages. But I'll tell you what, look, you ain't got to pay any more. Instead of spending the rest of that transfer money, I think he's worth the wages and is enough to make a difference. And if we don't want to disrupt the structure, we'll give him a signing on fee and bonuses and everything like that. I'm Steve Lansdowne. I'm going to think, okay, as long as you don't spend more, right? Why would he block somebody whose wages are more? Not a loan, because you're talking a permanent, somebody coming in as a deal. But equally, if it was Callas going to a Premier League club and they said we could have a striker on loan for a season that was going to cost us 30 grand a week, which is 1.5 million quid, would we sooner have that lad from Rotherham for £1 million plus wages, or a Premier League striker for a cost of £1 million quid? £1.5 million. I know what I'd want. What would you agree with that?
Well, you're assuming a lot of things there. You're assuming, yeah, but it might not have been presented in that way. I mean, the fee may not be as big. The lad, if a lad's coming in permanently and they've got the wage bill, that bearing in mind that Vyman, Simpson, Baker have all re-signed on less money. That was made public. And it was made public for a reason. It was to say to the other players, we ain't paying big wages anymore, boys.
Right. Which might be another reason why he does want Naki Wells out the door then, for not starting him.
Well, yeah, but it's all right saying, well, he wants this player out the door. Someone else has got to want to buy him, and they've got to want to buy them for something like the money they cost us. So you've got 8 million with Kalas, you've got 5 million with Naki. So, and then you've got to get someone to come in who will be happy to be on those wages. And in that way, you've got to be looking League One, League Two, or possibly the Championship. You're not going to be looking at the Premier League, because some of the kids at Chelsea who can't get in a team are on 60 and 70 grand a week.
Yeah.
So, and players might accept it for a loan, but they're not going to put up with that for a permanent signing. And if you think players don't talk to each other about what they earn, you're living in a very, very strange world, because they do. And the minute it gets out that, oh, X player's coming, he's on 20 grand a week more than the rest of us, they'll all be lined up outside their agents. We all lined up out Pearson's office. Outside Pearson's office saying, well, come on then. Why can't my lad have the money? Now, you mentioned something about Callum O'Dowd earlier on, and the way I describe Callum is he is a scorer of great goals. He needs to become a great goal scorer and a great assist man. So if he said, look, I'm only going to get 2 or 3 goals a season, tops, but I'll get you 16 assists, Nicholas Eliasson, then I would think, yeah, okay, fair enough, I'll accept that. But at the moment, if you look at his record, he scored some wonderful... I mean, that goal he scored at Norwich, wow, that was like a real Lionel Messi.
Yeah, and if he did that half a dozen times a season, only got 6 goals and as many assists, you'd say superstar. Guys, look, there's some idiots on here that have logged in. I have blocked them now for future. And Deo and Jimmy Mann calling them out.